The name of this film is McLuhan Way, In Search of Truth.
Is it very time?
Okay.
Masterwork Productions presents a Darren Masterson film in association with Salt and Light.
I welcome now a man whose name has become part of the language of our time. He's been called one of the great original thinkers of the 20th century. He is, of course, Professor Marshall McLuhan.
He had a ring of authority in his voice. You can't have trusted what he was saying.
That's Derek DeKirchhoff.
Mm-hmm.
Was for real, but you didn't quite get it.
He was always very certain that he was right, both in matters of faith and...
Hey, Jerry, come on in here.
I know it. I'm washing my hands, and I can hear it. And, Bob, you don't have to stop and tell them because they get titles.
No, I'm going to say some other things.
Okay.
Okay, now this is McLuhan's youngest son, Michael, the sixth kid. In the correspondence we have between Sheila Watson and McLuhan, Sheila was like the aunt of the McLuhan family, quote aunt. And so when Michael gets busted, I think he got busted in Greenwich Village when McLuhan was at Fordham that year, 67, 68. He goes running around smoking dope, so he was only like 15 years old. And by 69, 70, he's on trial and McLuhan is commiserating with Sheila about, well, pray for us, hope the trial goes well tomorrow. So Michael, and he's in Stephanie's 1984 documentary, and he talks about how his father, he stopped listening to his father at the age of 13 when his father tells him, what did you learn in school today? Oh, we learned that Brasilia is the capital of Brazil. And McLuhan says, Brazil is not the capital. And Michael says, yes, it is. It says in the book, this is what they taught us. He says, no, Rio de Janeiro is the capital. It's not the capital. Now, I would say that McLuhan's right, because Brasilia became this bureaucratic city, and it was a problem. Maybe years later, people gradually built it up. But he was talking about it's not natural ground as a capital. It was an artificial government ground city called Brasilia. So Michael says in the documentary, since his father was putting down his school and that, he says, that's when I stopped listening to him. So Michael always probably had a problem with his father, rebelled in marijuana, and he marries a black girl, which is a problem for Mrs. McLuhan, who's from Texas. I heard all this from Marg and Jim Stewart, the secretary, and her husband. And Michael becomes a guitar maker. And Neufeld talks about him. He was a great guitar maker in the 70s, 80s, in the music industry or craftsman. Mm. And then he moved off to Owen Sound. He moved out into the country, got divorced from the black woman, I think, and married a couple, one or twice after that, I don't know. But he's always been totally not connected to the McLuhan world. But when I talked to Mrs. McLuhan in 1995 and told her I was going to talk to the Evergreens, didn't know if she knew anything about them, but I explained it, and said, did you have any questions for Marshall? Because she had talked about, when I did the archives, that McLuhan spoke to her, and so I knew she was open to psychic phenomena. But so after she understood who I was talking about, she said, oh, I had a session with the Evergreens. Michael took me to them.
You're kidding!
Yeah. No, I'm not kidding
you. So did she also give you a question then?
No. So she said that she had a nice, that was good, and but she's not interested in asking him any more questions. She didn't have any more of that. She didn't want to do it.
So are you done with Michael? You have any other encounters with him?
No, I've never met him.
Okay, because there's two or three more McLuhan docs that you have that you've seen that I have copies of.
Yeah,
ABC doc.
Yeah.
I forgot the other titles. Yeah. He's in one of them, and supposedly that's his artwork, or maybe that's just a picture. But he has this weird photography 3D artwork that he sells too.
Oh, okay,
and he's sort of.
He may have changed over the last few years because, here he is talking about his father as if, he was into it. He wasn't, as far as I understand, though. I never met him. Right. And I met a friend of Eddie's, this guy. He actually helped Eddie and me take my books down from Toronto to City Island. I went to his home in Toronto, and his girlfriend knew Michael, longtime friend, and she said Michael was the nicest guy she ever met.
Really?
Great guy, yeah. Oh, whereas all the other fucking kids, Eric and everybody.
Is Mary still in San Francisco?
You would have said all the other kids kind of people have problems with. Right.
Is Mary still in San Francisco?
Oh, no. She went homeless. She went back to Toronto and stayed with her parents. They gave her an apartment. She screwed that up. No one knows. Apparently, the last we heard, she was in L.A. walking around lost, you know?
No.
Oh, yeah. That's that was about
the
5 years.
One that's naked in...
Yes, the twin of Terry.
Oh, the oldest.
Eric is the oldest. Eric is the oldest, and then the two daughters are twins, and they're second oldest.
And
then Stephanie is the next daughter, and she made the documentary in 1984. And then her younger sister Elizabeth is a successful museum curator or something.
What's Stephanie do? Still production?
No, I don't know. She's married to somebody, some hoity-toity. I think they're in High Society of Toronto now. But she was a reporter. You see in the letters with Sheila Watson, she gets in the New York Society, like Mary got into San Francisco High Society through their McLuhan connections. And Stephanie, when McLuhan dies, after McLuhan dies, and she made a documentary in 1984, which was played on PBS, and Zappa saw it. Remember? And Zappa told me that to him, it looked like that McLuhan was not all there, to quote Frank. And, but Stephanie, because
from your point of view, was Frank biased? Or I mean, would you have agreed with Frank at that point?
No, I'll tell you what I told him. I said, no, you don't understand, Frank, that Marshall was an actor. And he's being different selves in different media. And yes, you might think he does, you know, I don't know, you perceive he's empty or not all there. That's because he was acting. That was my attempt to explain to him. But probably Frank didn't have a clue what Marshall was talking about and probably thought it was totally stupid. And maybe Marshall looked old or something. Who knows what subjective thing is. But I tried to explain it, get him to look at it a different way, and I don't know if he did. But, so Stephanie, this was successful, this documentary. And she was interviewed a lot, and she talked about how she was part of the high journalistic, high media, friend of Tom Wolfe, that world in New York in the 70s. She became a cocaine addict. And when she was, I guess, going cold turkey or recovering from illness from it, she says in these interviews that she started to wonder who the hell was her father and looked into him, didn't really know anything about him or didn't understand him. And then she realized how important he was, and then felt motivated to make this documentary. The one in 1984 that got on PBS and all over the place. So that's the story about them. And then he's the youngest. He's younger than Elizabeth.
Right.
Okay, so did you ask me something? Or is that it? So this is Michael claiming whatever. I press pause, then press
just
pause again.
No, just hit play.
With his own work in the media, he knew he was right.
I don't know what he's saying there.
Jesus Christ, there is no distance or
I'm
separation.
I'm just going to go back a bit and just hear what he's saying.
Good, that's enough. Hit play.
He was always very certain that he was right, both in matters of faith and with his own work in the media. He knew he was right.
Now, will that thing go away?
Yeah. In Jesus Christ, there is no distance or separation between the medium and the message. It's one case where we can say that the medium and the message are fully one and the same. That's a quote, Marshall McLuhan.
Yeah, that's from The Electric and the Light. The Light, what is it?
The Medium and the Light.
Yeah. In Jesus Christ, there is no distance or separation between the medium and the message. It's the one case where we can say that the medium and the message are fully one and the same. Now, do you have Understanding Me, the collection of essays from her documentary, collection of interviews and that, that Stephanie put
out?
It's
too hard to get out right now, though.
Because there's an important statement about the medium and message in there where Marshall changes it. But anyways, you want...
What do you make of the statement, Bob? And also whatever alteration he made to it.
Yeah, it's the one case where we can say the medium and the message are fully one the same. You need to read the fuller... The words before and after it.
In the medium and the light?
Yeah. Because this is, in the Catholic context, it's kind of
Here's
cheating.
Understanding me, too.
Great. It's in the Catholic context, it's...
Bob, mute when we're on pause, because I hate that buzz. So okay. That's why we mute.
Oh, okay. So the... this is the Catholic Church kind of just taking something out of context.
to prop up their own.
Yeah, their own simple terms.
How do you know? Isn't it just Darren? Why do you say the church made this?
Because it was made for the Catholic Channel on Catholic TV.
Oh, right, but
Vatican TV,
okay.
Or something.
So it's not so much the church made it. It's Darren said, "Hey, I can make something for you guys." It's more.
Well,
to me.
No, they asked him to make it. Someone went to the. What do you call
we
it?
Would
what
like
you call the inaugural thing?
Christening?
No, the the
baptism. Crucifixion?
The crucifixion. the book launching, the film launch, the premiere, right? Okay. At the premiere, apparently there were priests speaking there.
And
they were saying, we didn't understand Marshall, but the church needs to fucking catch up to what Marshall was warning, because we're in big trouble. We're irrelevant.
Fucking, they caught us fucking all these boys. That all the churches in Boston, these guys go, peel the bucks, and then they go, we're closing down all the churches, and all these fucking Irish Catholics go, what? They go, yeah, we got to pay for all these fucking
trials,
butt fucking. Hey, man, we want our churches. Now you're old, you don't need a church anymore. What? I want a church to go for you. Oh, I need my church. You're mean to the church people. Oh, we're nice.
We don't care who's minister or what he fucked. We need our church.
That's such. It really typifies how the world goes.
No, how people
they've been
need.
Fucking butt fucking the boys from day one. But then when they catch them, then when they make it an issue, that's when it fucks up. So it's like the doctors have been killing people for years, pulling the plugs. But when Kevorkian makes it an issue, then they go throw them in jail.
Yeah, you're saying that the sheep never get the message. Is that what you're saying, John?
Well, I don't know what I'm saying. I'm making an observation that sometimes things are better off. It's out of sight, out of mind. You don't have to
express.
It's like gays in the army. As soon as Clinton goes, well, we should acknowledge the gays in the army, everyone goes, that's so stupid.
Just
let them be in the army and don't make an issue of it.
Yeah, that's what Baudrillard talks about, the obscenity of exposure of everything. He says people know too much, and that causes all kinds of problems. The other thing was...
But is that true?
What, that people know too much?
No, that it causes problems.
Oh, by the way,
you look the other way? Is there a time when you shouldn't... I learned about asking questions. You should ask questions and you know that what they're going to say is the answer. But there is an art to asking the right question at the right time.
Right.
You know...
Yeah, but some people just want to get media attention. They're trying to make a name for themselves or whatever. People, all kinds of reasons.
Well, that's John Cage. He says it doesn't matter what's in your press kit, it's how thick it is.
Yeah. But Ron Paul was on Meet the Press the other day, and he's talking about repealing the 1947 National Security Act.
No, he's trying to do everything. He wants, rebuild the Federal Reserve.
Why, you like him?
Oh, I think he's awesome. He's too radical to ever be considered for anything, but...
How'd he do the other night in the
polls?
Anniversary of the Boston Tea Party, December 16th, was
Pollster
after...
guys.
Yeah, November 5th, V for Vengeance Day, Guy Fawkes Day, they raised $4 million, okay? You heard about that.
Yeah.
They attempted it again on December 16th, the anniversary of the Boston Tea Party in 1773. How'd he do?
Didn't hear about it.
Oh, okay. Maybe they didn't want to talk about it. So, I like what Burroughs said. The masses always lose. So, no matter what is exposed or whatever, the mass mind always, no, I don't care if they butt fucking you, we need our church. That's the mass mind, right?
The mass mind always loses?
That's what Burroughs said, yeah. It's a good law of life. The mass mind always, the masses
that's,
always
that's
lose.
That's very Zappa-esque. Because
for the record,
in the
Mark?
World again, in the race about you and the world will always win. If you win, then think of it as a bonus, but always expect to lose.
Yeah, the masses always win and keep everything tragic.
Yeah, Burroughs says the mass.
The masses always lose.
Yeah, and the fight between you and the world always wins.
Now, this gets confused by the medium. That's the message of Finnegan's Wake and McLuhan. When you have a mass mind extended, then it gets confusing. That truism starts to get blurred and mixed up. Okay?
Well, by the way, what was Marshall's... what did he think of Burroughs?
Oh, he said stay away from him. Evil.
Yeah, but his our article on Naked Lunch in The Nation is must-reading.
Right, and you have to see how he responds. Here's Burroughs being a media ecologist, following in what McLuhan calls the panic tradition of James Joyce. McLuhan distanced himself from media ecology in that article. It's the most important article because the subtlety of it, you won't even know what I'm saying unless you read it carefully.
Wow.
We could go through that at some point.
He distanced himself
from media ecology.
So I'm going to turn off being a media ecologist to write this.
Beg your pardon?
He says, I'm going to turn off being a media ecologist to write just this one review. Is that what you mean?
Partly. The meaning of media ecology, and Barrington Nevitt's book, The Communication Ecology, what does it mean in a poetic sense of the ecological interaction of media? The final vision of McLuhan about what was going on, you can call it the traditional poetic vision, turns on understanding why he said what he said in the Burroughs Review. Because if you get to a reasonable understanding of McLuhan, you say, oh yeah, he advocated turning off TV and all that, and that's media ecology. No, that's what we call efficient causality. There's another level to McLuhan, and to communicate that is really difficult. But I use that article... I would use that article if anybody cared to go through it, and I'd point out the big difference. The big thing, he's saying William Burroughs is the best since Finnegan's Wake, quote, the best. So why would he tell me and other people stay away from Burroughs? It's because Burroughs was in a panic situation. McLuhan was not a panicker. Okay, and it's very complex, but it does begin with this Christian quote. It begins with this Christian quote, Scott. So what do you want to say?
Well, it was towards the end of his life, Burroughs was so freaked out that Ginsberg and a couple of other notables got together and held like a shamanic ritual to try to get him depossessed or something.
I read the
he thought he was possessed of a dark angel.
That's right. I read an interview with Burroughs near the end of his life where he talks about that. Mm. I think he meant the thing that possessed him when he killed his wife.
Yeah.
That still was always in him, and it became a big problem in his later years. And I think he asked them to exorcise him and all that.
Right.
What, Jerry's now going to tape us?
Yeah, I want to have some taping.
You can stop it for a second. See, this is really important to deal with this quote
here. Look at that, man.
High tech. We're going to deal with this quote here about Jesus Christ being a case where the meaning and the message are fully one and the same. And this is page 103 of The Medium and the Light. But before we go into that, we will move to page 241 in Understanding Me, which is a collection of great essays by McLuhan, including some transcripts of some of the tape quotes or tape sections in the 1984 documentary. She sells in the 90s the extended full or most of the broadcasts and interviews that only are excerpted slightly in the one-hour 1984 documentary. So she sells to institutions, this is the thing Jerry's been trying to get, to universities, the full stuff, and she had to go around for years, I guess, and get the rights from every broadcaster that had it. But this book transcribes some of that stuff that you can't get. Unless you have paid a lot of money or something, you know. I think it's cheaper now. But when I bought it in the mid-90s, when she first offered it, it was $700 for six tapes. So you go to page 241 in this book, and it says, the motor car, McLuhan's, he speaks this. This is a transcript of a talk. The motor car as the supreme form of privacy has been threatened, in fact, superseded by television. You know how we were arguing about peak oil last night? This is what Robin should hear. Television brings the outside inside, and it takes the inside outside. It pulls the rug out, or the highway out, from under the car. It deprives the car of its rationale and its meaning. If the car had not lost its real meaning in our lives, there would be no oil price hikes. That is, nobody would even dream of allowing the oil price hikes to occur. The rise in oil prices, of course, is a promotional deal. There's no question. I mean, that's well known, but it is something that could not have happened if the car had not already been obsolete.
Wow, that is fucking 2000. And Bob, that's amazing because the content of TV is auto cars.
Buy this
car. Buy that car. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's kinetic. Well, it's the kinetic sensibility of Americans' bias, century bias. Speed it up. That's all special effects. The latest Bruce Willis movie is just fucking
car smashing.
You
don't have to buy a car. You have to buy a TV.
Yeah.
And then it's like you're in a car. And now you get GPS. There's a little TV set that tells you where to go. Jeez. They gotta have Bob's voice in there. Hey, I'm Bob. Take a right up here. While you're thinking about taking a right up here, let me read you a step.
This
page. We got a new business. God, that's the business you've been. Sell Bob
as a vocal
as a
music
vocal voice for act. GPS.
Yeah. So then he says,
pull over, don't drive anymore. Listen to this. People go, wait, I have to pull over. I'm on my cell phone, I gotta get a pen. And then the GPS just says, pull over. I'm gonna read you from McLuhan.
Yeah, okay, so it says, the car has lost its place in the heart of the people. That doesn't mean it's going to disappear overnight. Not at all. All it means is the effects of the car are disappearing, and privacy and service environments are part of the effects. When I say the medium is the message, I'm saying that the motor car is not a medium. Everybody up to this point, even you, Jerry, thinks TV is the medium. TV is not the medium. He explains. When I say the medium is the message, I'm saying that the motor car is not a medium. The medium is the highway, the factories, and the oil companies. That is the medium. In other words, the medium of the car is the effects of the car. When you pull the effects away, the meaning of the car is gone. The car as engineering object has nothing to do with these effects. The car is a figure in a ground of services. It's when you change the ground that you change the car. The car does not operate as the medium, but rather as one of the major effects. I'll read that again. The car does not operate as the medium, but rather as one of the major effects of the medium. So, quote, the medium is the message is not a simple remark, and I've always hesitated to explain it. Isn't that incredible?
This is 241 and 242?
Two, yeah.
Dude, I'm using
You memorized that page.
I've revamped my whole lecture now.
I know. So, you start all over again. Sorry, I was all wrong. Thanks to Bob. I'm now really a footnote to Dog. I wasn't before. I lied. Okay. So, quote, the medium is the message is not a simple remark. It's very, if you could see him, he's there just talking casually.
Right.
And so, the medium is the message is not really what I meant.
That's when I first said, my first McLuhan lecture, I'm in a session. You said, tell medium the sessions is like, it's just like an aside, like being butthead.
He goes, yeah, medium is a message. But that is just a figure for a whole explanation.
Right.
You say it as an aside because you haven't got time to explain it.
Right.
And that's what he's proving that he meant that when he said it's an aside on the album. So he says, because it's not a simple remark and I've always hesitated to explain it. Yeah, people think he wrote books trying to explain it. It really, but he could mean, I've always hesitated to explain it verbally. You know, I'll write about it, create confusion that way. It really means a hidden environment of services created by an innovation. And the hidden environment of services is the thing that changes people. It is the environment that changes people, not the technology. Now, you know, anybody who ever teaches technology in media and McLuhan says that technology changes the people. He's pointing out it's the environment, the hidden ground of services and disservices that changes people, not the technology. Now, that's a revolutionary statement in McLuhan land. You know what I mean? He says, then he goes on about Ivan Illich. But that's the end of that particular one, living at the
Great.
Speedway.
Bob, there's a question, though.
Did you go great? That's great to know this.
Well, I'm fucking believe it. So when he says the telegraph caused
The Civil War.
He means the environment of the Telegraph. So that's why people get all upset. No, the Telegraph didn't go on. So then they're right when they go, well, it helped cause. Or they don't like that word cause.
Well, it gets all complicated. But remember, he says, all my writings are manipulative satire. It's almost like, isn't that, we'll see in here, Marshall, could you sum up what you're trying to say in 1 minute? No, I couldn't do that. It's almost like there's no... another point. Marshall, should we take you seriously? No, don't take me too... People take me too seriously. In other words, he knew it was impossible to fucking communicate what he really meant under electronic conditions.
Right.
So he did other ways of prompting people. So he made up this statement that technology changed people to get attention, and everybody argued and yelled and screamed and... I don't know, he got a few people came by and noticed him that he wouldn't have noticed before, and then he got some good colleagues. I don't know what he got out of it all, you know what I mean? He did say, being a Catholic, you must suffer, so he actually created a lot of mass confusion so he could suffer and be a good Christian, okay? You know, it's very interesting and complex, you know.
So it's basically, it is the environment, but he's not going to give up the fact that he says the Telegraph caused the Civil War, because that's a stimuli to start the discussion.
That's right. He says the artist always will do anything to get attention. So he did all this, his books, to get attention and then see where it can go. I mean, maybe he said, well, people are going to take 200 years to understand me, so I'll just lay the groundwork.
Come on in.
Come on in.